Romans chapter 12 says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. For as in one body we have many members, and the members do not all have the same function, so we, though many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of another. Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, in proportion to our faith, if service in serving, the one who teaches in his teaching, the one who exhorts in his exhortation, the one who contributes in generosity, the one who leads with zeal, the one who does acts of mercy with cheerfulness. Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil, hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal, be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope, be patient in tribulation, be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. For by so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Let's pray. Thank you, God in heaven, that you do give us all we need, that you give us your Spirit, most importantly, which will work in our hearts and conform our minds. Pray, God, that we would follow you, we would believe in you, and we would trust you. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, if you would like to turn to Genesis chapter 34, this is going to be our primary text today. We're going to just warn you that I'm not sure how this is going to be as far as organization-wise. I hope it's not too scattered around. As I read this chapter, on a superficial level, it seems fairly straightforward. But then as I would keep reading things, and more and more questions would pop into my head in order to, like, really try to take the information in the correct context with the correct frame and understand it as correctly as possible. And part of that also is going back and reading the chapter before it, the next chapters after it, and very easily you get into lots of different rabbit trails that are relevant, but a little bit difficult to put to nail down, to like just really say, yeah, that's exactly what I think that's supposed to be or mean. And then also another thing that I personally want to try to do anytime I'm looking at a text and teaching, for sure, or whatever, but that is, I really, really, really want to focus on what is actually there. And again, what I want to try to do myself is not take something that's ambiguous and then decide I'm going to choose to look at it a certain way when it doesn't tell me exactly how to look at it. And then take what I've chosen to do, and which may be completely, perfectly right and taught in Scripture, maybe other places, but it's really not what's in front of me right now. That's me. That's what I'm just. So that's a goal that I'm having, to try to limit to what's here and what I can say, yep, for sure, this is what it is. And that includes, and that requires me to take looks at things, and as I read it, think about the complete context, think about how, you know, and then not just take the first translated word at face value, and then go digging and say, okay, is this a good word here, or is there another word that would be just as good, et cetera. And I get it. I try to be cautious about, because I know my limitations as far as, like, again, it's very similar to, I don't want to just arbitrarily say what seems to me it would be this way when I'm not told that. Also, I don't want to do the same thing about, I give a lot of preference to the words that are provided by the scholars that have given us our translations. And so I want to not go overboard there too. So it's a fine balance as we go through this. So I found myself needing to back up just a little bit to get a running start at this, and want to just interact a little bit with the last few verses of chapter 33. And again, let me just, I guess maybe it would be helpful, I'll just point out some of the questions that as I read the 34 that I didn't know the answer to. They seem like maybe insignificant questions, but I do think that they, for me, there are questions that I wanted to take into the context, but I didn't have the information. For instance, just a few for instances, like, how old was Donna? We're not told. We're not told if she was, you know, if she was 12 years old or if she was 28 years old. And when I look at what's going on, though I'm going to let the cat out of the bag, I don't think 34 is about Dinah. Now, she's a character in here, and she's obviously part of what's going on. I don't think that 34 is in our text, in our sacred scriptures, for the sake of what's happening to Dinah personally. But still, I still would like to know, like, well, how old is she? Well, what should I? Because when it says she did something, is that, How do I look at that? Because I look at it differently from a 12-year-old or a 28-year-old. I would expect different things from based on the age. That's one example. Why or what's going on here when at the very end, maybe when Jacob tells Simeon and Levi, you know, what you've done is going to call may. He doesn't really say it is, but he really thinks what they've done is going to cause them great dysfunction among their neighbors. And so, like, when I look at that, I wonder, you know, I got to go ahead in the text, in the scriptures, to see if that actually came to pass. Was this a legitimate fear of his, or was this an illegitimate fear of his? So I'm saying those are the type of questions that come. I'm not sure we're going to completely get a 100% answer on. But those are some of the things that that I want to know. And then it's like, when we go to go back, I want to know, like, I really want to know, when did this happen? Is the, because we've already realized that while we are given order in the text, we're given, they come to us in a certain order, right? We like to call that a chronology. Well, it may be the chronology. The true chronology is the order in which they happened. That sometimes is very obvious and perfectly clear that the order given to us in the text, like from chapter to chapter to chapter. Remember, we didn't have chapters, so those are sort of arbitrary. So we have this was told, then this was written down, and then this was written down, or whatever. You know, it's like, does it matter? It may not matter. It may not matter, or it might matter when this really happened. Sometimes it becomes more of a, just a curiosity than a necessity. And so I don't want to dwell too much on the curiosities, because maybe they're not as important. I don't know. They could be very important, though. So I guess to make sure we're all on the same page as far as like what's going on here, I want to way back up, and I just want to remind you that what's been going on. Chapter 33 was Jacob meeting Esau, and that meeting, that reunion, so to speak, and then we're told about what happens, a few things that happen after that, as far as Jacob's travels. The next chapter, of course, is 34, and that's the chapter with everything that happens with Dinah and her brothers, and the people there of the town in Shechem. Then what's going to happen in 35 is Jacob is going to continue moving around. He's going to do some more moving. His story is going to keep on going. But chapter 36 is really just a big parenthesis, because it's going to tell us about Esau's life and his timeline, his lineage, and that sort of stuff. And so it's really a break in the flow, because we have been running down Jacob for a while now, from when he was born, basically. We've been hearing about Jacob. The focus of the story, well, we've had other characters. We've had Esau. We've had Rebekah and Isaac in there. We've had Laban. We've had, you know, Rachel and Leah. We've had lots of different characters coming into the story, but the main thread has been Jacob and his life. And what's going to happen, what we see is in 35, that really closes out at the end of 35. Then you have 36, review of Esau. 37 was a shift, and now there's a new thread that's starting in 37. And that new thread is Joseph. And basically, nearly to the end, if not to the end of Genesis, is going to be Joseph is going to be our main character. So that's, to me, that's one of the things I do. I look back and I go, okay, what's going on here? We have these chapter breaks that feel so permanent, but we realize they're not really that permanent. So we have to be careful about putting too much emphasis on, well, this was this chapter. This is a new chapter, right? So there's that. And then also, we've done a lot with Jacob. And when we had this down here at the end, we had this question that I didn't feel like really I felt comfortable with how it was answered, because I'm not trying to be critical of how it was answered. I'm being critical about how I just wanted to re-look at it for myself. I understand the. And it's the question of, did Jacob go see Esau, or did he lie to him? Did he deceive him and say, hey, I'm coming, and then go a different way? And to me, it still was unclear. The text did not. I wanted to go back, and I wanted to see, like, was it absolutely mandatory that from the text? Because if it is, then golly bomb, we're going to go with what the text says. Or was it somewhat ambiguous about whether this guy was, and so Because I actually found some biblical maps. I mean, Bible maps or whatever you want to call them. I found some that showed Jacob going down to Esau, coming back up. And so it turns out that there is divided about which one, about did he actually go or not. And I want to give you a couple of things that I found that might be interesting. And again, this all goes, we're getting to 34, but I got some things I want to show you too, right quick. So let's see here. We're going to leave it on the Google, the Chromecast. We can't hardly see that. But does it get brighter as it warms up? Do I need to cut more lights off?
It's brighter now, it's better.
All right, there we go. All right, let me see what I can do here. I was hoping this would work okay, but we'll see. Let me do this right quick. Is it off? Okay. Here we go. Well, that didn't work. That didn't help anything. There we go. All right, let me see if I make it bigger. Oh, well, poodle. If I turn it this way. I'll have to move it around for you. Okay, this is one of those maps that I told you that it actually has Jacob coming down to see Esau, then going back up. And the interesting thing is there is room in the text for that to happen. There's room in the timeline for that to happen. But the other thing I wanted to show you guys is I did some research and I found out that for somebody traveling by themselves solo, like Jacob probably was on his way up to Haran, they can go about 15 to 25 miles a day on average. And this was supposed to be research for the people of the time. But if you're with a caravan of animals, with a caravan which usually has animals with it, a caravan would be like, you know, a bunch of people on camels, you know, that sort of thing. 5 to 9 miles per day. And I would say probably when he's coming back with all those sheep, probably down toward the bottom end of that, because the sheep are not going to move very fast, because they got to kind of eat as they walk and stuff. So I thought that was interesting. And this is my little rough outline of the state of Alabama over there. I got a map because I thought that the youngsters would benefit from, like, it doesn't look, sometimes it looks like sometimes it looks like it's real far away, but like the state of Alabama is 330 miles from top to bottom and 210 miles across short ways. Israel, modern day Israel, from the tip of modern day Israel to the top of modern-day Israel is 200 miles. So it's shorter than the state of Alabama, modern-day Israel. I didn't go across ways, but it's narrower also. And modern-day Israel now, it stops, the West Bank is right here. I think it stops down here somewhere, if I recall correctly, modern-day Israel. And then modern-day Syria is up here, and Jordan comes all the way over to here, modern-day Jordan. So and I got another picture here. Let's see if I can get it to come up. Here you go. Alright. If you were in Mobile, Alabama, okay guys, you know, we're right here, right by Birmingham. Basically. If you were in Mobile, Alabama, and you drove up 65 and then you went on to 85 and you went 85 all the way to Greenville, South Carolina, maybe a little bit past Greenville. And that's almost straight. You see how the interstate does this right here? It almost follows a straight line right through there. That is 450 miles. That's the distance from Beersheba to Haran. Whoops. Sorry about that. That isn't what I meant to do. That's the distance from Beersheba. And Haran is off the screen, by the way. Haran is from Bethel to Haran, 390 miles. I'm sorry this is so small. 390 miles. And from here, Peniel and Succoth and stuff, to basically Damascus up there, that little dot I put Damascus in, that's 200 miles. So, I mean, you got a little bit of space here, but then 390, so you still got 200 miles further off the page. And he goes, they went from Israel, and they went through Syria, and they went into the almost to modern-day Turkey. And I didn't put a Middle East map up for you, but I just wanted you to realize that from this map, it looks like that's Haran up there. That's not Haran. That's halfway to Haran. You still got another 200 miles to go. So from Beersheba all the way to Haran off the top of the page is from Mobile, Alabama to Greenville, South Carolina, South Florida. Now, see, this is hill country of Gilead, and it goes on up. Hill country is, it goes on up a little bit higher. It's kind of a big area right there. Laban caught him in the hill country of Gilead. He was almost halfway down here or more before Laban caught him. Laban made some effort to go after this fella, which I thought was, I didn't realize that when we were talking about it. That's kind of cool information. So, and then you got like, for him to go see Edom, from there to the bottom of the Dead Sea is about 100 miles. Now, Seir is all this area down here. So we don't know how far down he had to come really to get down in there. But it's about 100 miles. And, all right, 100 miles is from Birmingham to the Tennessee line. That's how long. That's how far that he'd have to go to go see Esau, 100 miles. And that 200 miles, remember that 200 miles from, where is it? From here to Damascus, basically, 200 miles. That's the same as if you went from about my house all the way to Chattanooga, Tennessee. That's how far that is. Traveling, walking. That's a straight line all the way. From my house, because y'all have all been to my house, so it's easy. From my house to church is 45 miles. So if we consider that distance, that's about from Hebron to Shechem, about 45 miles. And then you have these other, you know, it's only about, these guys are just, you know, a few miles apart. How far is it from church to y'all's house, Benjamin?
Like 3.5.
3.5 miles, so. That's basically how far this stuff's apart. 4 to 5 miles right in here. And Shechem's over here, and it's about 12 miles from this area over to Shechem. And later we're going to hear about Joseph, and he can't find his brothers in Shechem. He's going to go to Dothan. It's about 10 miles up the beaten path to Dothan. So I thought that maybe this might be interesting and a little helpful for everybody. So if you're going to go 25 miles, it takes you a day or two by yourself, twice as much with a caravan. To go 200 miles from Birmingham to Tennessee line by yourself, 8 to 16 days is your travel time, walking. Probably having a donkey to carry your stuff with you, but you're walking most of the way. All right, and also, this map shows the possibility of him going down to visit Esau, like he said he was going to. But Esau could be down here, and it shows him going straight back up. But if you, we're going to find out that most likely, because we're going to, you know, trust the text says that after he met with him, he went to Succoth and made the booth. So I do believe that happened next. It seems like, from what I can read. So he would have left from Succoth, come down and saw Esau. The next place he goes is to Shechem. So he doesn't have to go back up this side of the Dead Sea. He could have swung down here and gone back up this way to get to Shechem, because Shechem's on the other side of Jordan. So if you look, best I could tell, If he did go to visit Esau, from the text and from the way it reads, there's the most likely time would have been between when he went to Succoth, and then between Succoth and Shechem, he actually maybe did a loop or whatever, came back up. If he did what he said he was going to do, and he did go down there, which it's possible that he did, based on what the text is. And here's one more thing about that I think is a clue that he may have done that. And that is what's... hang on a second, let me get this off here. That is what is said in verse 18 in chapter 33, verse 18. Because, okay, I'm going to read this, and then I want you to think about it for a minute and think about why does it say this? And Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, on his way from Paddan Aram, and he encamped before the city. Why does it say he came there safely? Why might it say that? Why is it? It's possible. Again, I'm not going to dwell on this, but maybe that's because he did go visit. I don't know, but it's interesting to me that it said and he came to safely after he's made other stops. There's not been any mention of he did it safely. Did it safely? But all of a sudden, he did it safely. I don't get it. You know, like it's almost like Shechem was this final, kind of like his final destination. And now he's made it, and he's safe. He made all that safely. He met Esau, and it was all safely. So I just want to put that in there. Because if you look at the timeline, if you remember our timeline where I had that chart with the people when they were, like, what happened at different ages and all that stuff and how it compared. If you look at the timeline, we have a very hard, we know the ages of folks at when Jacob leaves Haran, we know how old he was because we can back figure it. And we know how old Joseph was when he does his dreams. Now what we don't know for sure is exactly when he's getting to these different places that we're hearing about. And we also know we know exactly how old everybody was when Isaac dies. And Isaac dies, it says in the text, he dies is at Hebron. I mean, that's one of the last things we hear about Jacob is that. That's not the last thing we hear about Jacob, but that's the last thing that's sort of part of Jacob's story. We hear about Jacob later, but it's inside Joseph's story. So I'm not saying this, we don't hear about him later. But the last thing about Jacob's story is that we find him in Hebron with Isaac when he dies. And so because of that, we know that between Isaac dying and Jacob leaving Hebron is 23 years. So we got 23 years for all this to happen. There's a lot of time available for a trip down to Esau, etc. So it just means that it doesn't mean it happened necessarily. It says he was going to, but it doesn't ever say he did do it. That's the way it is. We don't have it for sure. But it does. There is a possible window there for that to have happened pretty easy. And all this is, like I said, I think part of understanding the Dinah thing too, the Dinah chapter, which I really think should be called the dishonor of Israel chapter. But all right, I wanted to show y'all that, sort of get us in the right context here. And too many pieces of paper here. All right, so now I'm probably gonna jump back a little bit a few times here, but what I want to do now is I just want to read chapter 34 quickly, and then I'll just talk about it as we go. I'm going to turn this on. We might need to turn back off in a bit. All right, chapter 34 starts, says, Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the women of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her, he seized her and lay with her and humiliated her. His soul was drawn to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. He loved the young woman and spoke tenderly to her. And so Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Get me this girl for my wife." All right. So right off the bat, we have Dinah. And again, some of those things I was talking about, it's like, well, she says she went out to see the women of the land. To see the women of the land is basically like, it's a bit of a euphemism for just, she went out to visit, basically. She went to talk and see the women of the land. And so, I guess I need to back up just a minute. And so we did find out in 33 that Jacob does arrive in Shechem at some point and buys from the sons of Hamor, and it specifically mentions that this is Shechem's father. So really, it almost goes with 34. It says, "And from the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father, he, Jacob, bought for 100 pieces of money the piece of land on which he had pitched his tent." And this is where he erects the altar, it says. And then we get into 34. So he's bought a piece of land. He was encamped, it says in 18, he was camped before the city, not in the city. So he's right beside the city somewhere. Doesn't say geographically if he's east, west, probably not north, or whatever. But it doesn't say where he is exactly, but he's near, he's before the city. So he's really close, but he's not inside the city. And I say that because I think of Lot. And he went and he was in Sodom. This made me think of Lot and how he, you know, went and then, but here we are, he's still outside the city. And so he bought the piece of land outside the city. So he did not buy any land in the city, but he bought some land nearby and near enough to be before it. So Dinah says, went out to see the women of the land. It doesn't say how old she is here. It doesn't say whether she went by herself or not. It doesn't say why she went. It doesn't say if this was the only reason she went. It just says she went and did it. That's all it says. To me, it doesn't tell us a lot. It doesn't tell us a lot about Dinah, what's going on here. That's all we get. In fact, besides the fact of Shechem, you know, talking about Dinah and how he feels about her, and later on we find that Dinah is actually still in Shechem's house when the brothers come to attack the city or to attack. Anyway, let me back up. Don't say that. Just they come and attack. That's all we get. That's all we know about Dinah. Except we do know that she was a daughter of Leah. Says that, and we know from before that she was, the birth order given was, and it says that she was born after the last son of Leah. So she's born after that. Now, I guess what we can do here is, I think I want to do this here. I want to talk about at least two different possible, really more than two, but timelines about this right here. I can't tell you which one is correct. I can just tell you that they both are plausible. So as you consider what you're reading, what you're thinking about Dinah, thinking about what's going on with the brothers, think about this. We can all think about this together. All right, so let me go to that. That's not good. I gotta edit. Okay. I'm going to make it bigger. I have to draw things to be able to understand them sometimes. So this is my attempt to help myself out. The top line is are things that we know from our previous chronological examination. We know it from these things on this side over here. We know how old Joseph. It's these green things that are hard markers that are in the text of Scripture. It's where I get this top line from. We know about his arrival in Haran. We know the 7 and 7 years for working for the wives. We know about the 6 more years. We know about him leaving. We know when Joseph, because it says he's 17 when he has his dreams. And we know Isaac dies, and we know that Joseph is 29 when Isaac dies at Hebron. Okay? The rest of it has to fit in there somewhere. And now we have 2 different timelines. So this is the classic. Most of the places you ask, they're going to give you this timeline right here. And there's no problem with it. There's no necessarily no problem with it, as far as I'm concerned. Except I do think there's some things that make me scratch my head about it. I'm not exactly sure that they fit very well. But this is the classic, and it's in the order of the text. As far as like, you're going to, exactly boom, 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 as we read it, if we read it from first of the chapter, then the chapter. Also, it has this has the scrunched up. Remember we talked about the birth of all the boys and boys and Dinah. This has the scrunched up version. I call it the scrunched up because they all get born. Remember, Joseph has to be born here. It's set. And so if we're going to, the classic is that Joseph was the next to the last and Benjamin was the last. So that means everybody else had to be born in 6 or 7 years right here. And so Dinah has to be in there too before Joseph, or at least right at Joseph. The last one of Leah. If you want to take it in perfect text order, it's before Joseph in the text. So I just left Dinah being before and in the scrunched up version. That means that we had all those super fast pregnancies and births. All right. So if that be the case, then that puts Dinah about 7 years old right here, a little bit after. Like if they leave, I went through and I did all the how fast can they travel and all that. And so they could easily, if they didn't have any problems, they could have been down at Succoth in about a year or so, I think pretty easy. It's a long way to go, but they could have done it. Now, so I'm putting Succoth right here. He does the Peniel thing, meets Esau, and then boom, got to Succoth. Just like the text says. I believe that's accurate. Just like this. So there's Succoth, right after he leaves and all that happens. Laban chases him and all that stuff, and now they're in Succoth. Dinah would be 7-ish years old right here. 6 plus a year, maybe another, could be 8. Within a year, okay, on this timeline. Now, if we follow text order, then they go to Shechem right after that. Now, sometime, and then if you follow text order, you got Dinah happens sometime in here. You got Bethel, goes to Bethel, leaves. Because it does seem to me, reading it, that God says, go to Bethel. And it could very logically be because of what happened in Shechem with the killing of the men in Shechem. It doesn't say because they killed the men, God said go to Bethel, but it's the next thing right after the incident of them killing everybody. And it's right after Jacob saying, oh, now I'm going to be a stink in the land. Which we hadn't got to, so sorry. Like I said, it's not a perfect way to do this. So you have Bethel from Bethel to Hebron is when Rachel dies. Benjamin's born in Bethlehem. They get to Hebron, and then you hear about Joseph's dreams next. Text order next. Joseph's dreams. Then
We have Hebron. Jacob is in Hebron with Isaac when he dies, way over here. This is an 11-year span. This is a 12-year span. Okay, this is the classic follow the text. This is the way it's got to be. So what that means is that if Dinah's 11, I'm going to say she's, let's just say she's 7. Maybe she was born, boom, right there, same time Joseph was. That's the youngest she would be on this. That means this has been a year out of the 11. You got 10 more. So right here, she's going to be 17 years old. So we got a little bit of time back here. So I'm going to say if they lived around Shechem for 8 or 9 years, she could be 15 or 16 years old when this happens. Anything back here, she's younger. Now, in that time frame, they were giving and taking in marriage as young as 12 or 13 years old. Okay? So it works. This could be. Here are the things that made me scratch my head. Now, I'm sorry, I'm going to read them to you. So this is text order, and there's a comment about Joseph when right after he does his dreams. We don't know how fast after that was the when he went to check on his brothers. It's the next thing in the text, but it doesn't mean it happened the next day. It just could have been a year later for all we know. But pretty close, it seems like, from the text, but we don't know exactly how long it was. But there's a comment in there that says he was sent from the valley of Hebron to go find his brothers who were pasturing near Shechem. So because of that valley of Hebron comment, if that valley of Hebron is related to Hebron the city, that would make sense that they've arrived in Hebron, and now Jacob's saying, hey, go check on your brothers, and he's sending him from the valley of Hebron. The funky thing about that is Hebron is in the hills. It's not in a valley. So that's, scratch my head on that. Also, another funky thing is that for this to happen, not too long, this doesn't have to take very long. Remember our map? It's not that far from Shechem to Bethel to Hebron. Day's journey. So it doesn't have to take very long. We can give it, they could have gone, hung out for a while or whatever. I don't know. It doesn't say what they did. It doesn't have to take very long to get to leave Shechem, get to Bethel, get to Hebron. We don't know how long it took. But Dinah, if we want Dinah to be not a very, very young teenager, but more of an older teenager, which we don't have any way to know what she was. It doesn't say in the text. There's nothing there. But if we want her older, we got to have her. We got to push. We're pushing up against this time right here, and what that means is that Joseph's going to be sent. If I'm given even some very lenient, I'm thinking within 5 years of the whole thing happening in Shechem. This thing's only 11. And this is only 12-year span. Joseph's things has to happen when he's 17. It doesn't have to happen when he's 17, but we know that he's got to get down to Egypt. He's got to do a bunch of stuff. So, within a few years, appears this within a few years. My point here is that not a long time between what goes on in Shechem and now, if they're actually in Hebron, Jacob is saying, go check on your brothers. They're up by Shechem, where these people, where I've been, I'm a stink now. See what I'm saying? It's like, and it says specifically, while he's looking for his brothers, he talks to a man in Shechem. Now, I don't want to take it too far that every man in Shechem was killed. It doesn't mean there can't be men there now. Men might have been away from home and came home after it was over. So definitely there could still be population there. But it's not only that he goes just kind of close by Shechem looking for his brothers. He goes into Shechem, says he went to Shechem and talked to a man in Shechem. And so I'm thinking the guy's like, maybe he didn't recognize him. I mean, there could be a lot of reasons, but it's kind of odd that after all this happening, the favorite son from the favorite wife, Jacob's cool about sending him to Shechem. That just seems a little bit weird, but not impossible. Okay, that's the normal, that's the classic thing. That's what's got to be going on with the classic version. Here's an alternative version. It's a longer version. This one, I'm gonna choose the longer births of everybody. And Joseph's going to be here, and Dinah's going to get born. But everybody's going to everybody's going to be born before they leave, like the text says. So everybody's born. There's Dinah. Now, the difficulty comes in that Dinah's like 2 years old right here. And so by here, she's only like 12 years old at this, when Joseph's 17. She's much younger now. So the question would be, remember I said if there's a time that he went to visit Esau, it's going to be between Succoth and Shechem. So I'm putting all the possibilities in, and sort of like other end of the spectrum. So I'm going to put a visit to Esau in here. And Esau would have been before Shechem. So that pushes Shechem way over here as far as when they get there. Okay? Now they're in Shechem. Now, if the Joseph thing doesn't have to happen in sequence, because, again, this is what I'm talking about, where if you look at the chapters, it's like, there's this chapter about the Dinah and Shechem. And then you got, basically, Joseph is over, you got a little bit about Esau, and then, Jacob's over, a little bit of Esau, and then Joseph starts. That could be the way it was put together. The book could be put together in, I'm going to tell you about Jacob. Now I'm going to tell you about Esau. Now I'm going to tell you about Joseph. But I'm not telling it to you exactly. I mean, this Joseph thing actually started over here, but now we're talking about Joseph, so I got to back up a little bit to get started with Joseph. Okay? If you take that as a possible approach, then what can happen is that Shechem can start anywhere in here, and go over all the way to it'd be like this could be their time in Shechem, and so that would mean that he sends them out to find his brothers pasturing around Shechem, which they're living around Shechem, so they're going to be around Shechem. In fact, he sends them and he goes into town to say, "Have you seen my brothers?" Now, what that means is, what about this Valley of Hebron thing? Because it specifically says he sent him from the Valley of Hebron. It means there's got to be something called the Valley of Hebron around the Shechem area. I don't know. It's nothing that's perfect. That's what I'm saying. To me, nothing fits perfectly. But that Valley of Hebron is the only thing that makes this scratch my head. Like, well, but it's got this Valley of Hebron thing going on. So, and then what would happen is that this, see, Dinah happens over here somewhere, still about this same age range, by the way. But then again, if we took all this and just shifted it back, and this was the proper understanding of the children being born, she's just basically 6 years older. Anyway, so this could happen. Joseph has already been sold in slavery by this time. Then Dinah happens. They kill everybody in town. He's like, dude, we got to get out of here. They go to Bethel. Then they go to Hebron. Oh, Benjamin happens. You know, Rachel died. They get to Hebron, and it's not absolutely necessary as you read it, but it sure sounds like he arrives at Hebron pretty much around the time Isaac dies. So, again, I'm just giving you an alternative here. The main point is like just sort of trying to figure out about how old was Dinah. I'm going to guess she was 15 or 16 either way. Is my guess, but she could have been young. She could have been younger, theoretically. Not much younger, according to this, but she could have been younger. It could have happened way back here, but that's kind of odd because then you got all this time after they're a stink, and then they're in bed.
Put her max at, what, 26, maybe?
Her max? Yeah, if she was born earlier on this timeline, that makes her 18 here. you know, a year or two for Joseph to be sold, because I'm putting it here versus here because I kind of it makes sense that it happens and they need to leave. That's the only reason it's there. It's again, the text has it's not that it's ambiguous, well, in a bad kind of way. It's just that it has flexibility. You can see it different ways as far as like, he doesn't just come out and say, this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and it's not like definitive. So anyway, I as you can tell, I got in the weeds a little bit on it. I really just wanted to, I guess, I thought it would be interesting to share that with you. Okay, so I think probably that's the majority of that. All right, so Dinah goes out. We've already read that. I gotta get back to the text. So Dinah, again, we don't know a lot about her. Probably a teenager, maybe late teens, even possibly 20s, but she's unmarried, so they did marry pretty young then, so maybe that pushes her age back into her teens because of that. Not absolutely mandatory, but so, you know, if she's a young teenager, did she go and do this out of just, you know, not being wise? Or if she's older, most of the scholars they give Dinah, they don't really consider this Dinah's fault at all. You don't know. So but most of them are like, Dinah just was doing something she wasn't like in rebellion to her father or anything like that. But maybe she should have known better. Maybe she shouldn't have known better. It's just not there. Which is why Dinah is not, I would consider a main, it's hard to say she's not a main character when it's like in your Bible it says Dinah's defilement. But really, like I said, I think it should be more like the dishonoring of Dinah results in a slaughter or something like that, because that's really where the focus is. The next so then we talk about Shechem. Shechem is the next character in here to kind of sort of think about. Shechem, It's odd, but here's the thing. Again, the more that I study and the more I read the Bible and all this, I think that we gotta be careful about imposing our current cultural expectations on that culture, because they had different cultural expectations, and we've seen that already, specifically like in the multiple wives deal and the slave women. So they were doing slaves, they were doing multiple wives, and it reads as if it is just the way it's done. There's no, and in fact, there's not even really any condemnation of it in the scriptures either. So it just reads as the way it was in that culture. And so another thing that's going on in that culture, best I could delineate, was there was even before, because this is pre-Moses, right? This is pre-Deuteronomy and the law. But we can go to Deuteronomy, we can see some very applicable laws here. The laws of like, if a virgin is taken and then is found out and, you know, he must pay the bride price kind of thing. Those are laws in Deuteronomy, right? Y'all remember those? We talked about those. And so, but it turns out, Those were also cultural laws found in other cultures of the time. This is a pretty good bit before Moses. This is like, you know, they're in Egypt for 400 years, and they ain't even got to Egypt yet. They're about to get to Egypt, but this is 400 or 500 years before Moses is given the law by God. But this is, so what I'm saying is that's not those laws. The laws of Moses were not, they were unique in terms of God gave them, and so because God gave them, we know that they're true and right. But God was also apparently giving common grace, and other people were coming up with similar requirements even before Moses gave the law. And so here we have this prince Shechem, and he's doing apparently what is pretty common among princes of the land, where he goes out and he sees a pretty woman and he takes her. Remember, Abimelech tried to do it to Sarah. We see later, Esther is taken by the king later to go in his harem. So this is not a necessarily unusual situation per se. It's definitely outside of what we find appropriate. And Scripture actually teaches about, if you do this, you've got consequences for doing it, you've got responsibilities for doing it, etc. So it's not that it's a... I'm not saying that, this is fine. I'm just saying it's kind of the way it was. And so it happens. What's very interesting to me is Shechem here. And when it says Shechem strongly was in verse 3. So in verse 2, he took her, lay with her, and then the next word was... in ESV, it's humiliated. Who's got something else?
Clave?
Sexually assaulted. Forced himself on her.
That's what version is that? NET? Okay. Alright. Let me make sure.
Play with her by force.
Yeah. Okay. So let me see here, where's that? Missing a page. Yeah, so that word is going to be afflicted, humbled, depressed. There's lots of different words there. So it could be anywhere from, the situation could be anywhere from she did resist him, she did say, I don't want to do this, she did do a lot of this, to maybe she was too scared to do anything, and now, but the implication is that she was not in full consent with this. And later, the brothers are going to consider that similarly. We talk about that later. Okay, so, but then in verse 3, we have this pretty dramatic, to me, it feels very dramatic, from going from forcing himself on her to now his soul was drawn to her. He loved the young woman and he spoke tenderly to her. So we have, this doesn't mean that he was any different per se, but it's very interesting that he does have this, because lots of times when if you want to consider this a rape, there's very much a feeling of disgust and vile toward the person after the event happens. And this is almost opposite of that. This man, and this goes to what I think this goes to, back to the cultural situation. That while we look at it and we, like, it's so far out of the realm of our culture for this type of thing to be happening, I don't think it was that far out of the realm of that culture for this to happen. The other thing is to consider is, like, This man is a pagan. He's not a Yahwehist in any stretch of the imagination. So pagans do what pagans do, And for the pagan, their minds are not conformed to the mind of Christ. So that his thoughts were not proper. His thoughts were, this is okay, and also, wow, this is a, I think I like this girl situation. So it's very, it shows you the disconnect between the disconnect that can happen there. So Shechem later is also going to also be considered. It's going to say most honorable of his house, and as we get into the next section, we're talking about his father Hamor.
Now it says, Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak to him. The sons of Jacob had come in from the... I skipped five, sorry. Now Jacob heard that Shechem, had defiled his daughter Dinah, but his sons were with his livestock in the field, so Jacob held his peace till they came. Again, this sounds a whole lot like they're living right there by Shechem. He heard about it pretty fast. Now, notice he heard about it. He didn't hear about it from Dinah, apparently, because Dinah is going to have to be rescued later. So apparently, Dinah wasn't alone. Somebody brought the news back to him about this. But his boys aren't home, and so he's like, I can't deal with this right now. He's just going to bide his time. So then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to speak with him, and the sons, all the rest of the boys, come home from the field. They were indignant, very angry, because ESV says, he had done an outrageous thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, for such a thing must not be done. Okay, so in their perspective, this was totally not okay, which is, we would expect that, right? We would go along with that. And now, the question is still, when it talks about because he had done an outrageous thing in Israel. Now, wait a minute. So I looked that up because that didn't make sense to me, because this isn't considered Israel yet. This isn't in Israel. It's not in, because it's not Israel yet. It's not, the place isn't Israel yet. The place is Canaan. So why do they render that in Israel? Well, it could be, preposition. Is that what that is? I think it's a preposition. And so, basically, from what I could tell, this is sort of like an idiom. Basically, it means that it should not be done. Like, this is like an affront. This is a familial slap in the face. A familial insult. Should not be done. And you could even read it. Outrageous thing. He had done an outrageous thing to Israel, to Jacob. This was considered an insult to the family, specifically the patriarch, to do this to one of the female members of the family. So that's the way they feel about it. Okay, verse 8, Hamor spoke with them, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to me. Make marriages with us. Give your daughter to us. Take our daughters for yourself. Then you shall dwell with us, and the land shall be open to you. Dwell and trade in it, and get property in it. They already got property, but maybe he's thinking in-town property. Shechem also said to her father and her brothers, let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say, I will give. Ask me as great a bride price as you. Whatever you say, I'll give you. Only give me the young woman to be my wife. So, Shechem here is... and then say, trying to find where it says he was more honored in the house. I didn't write down where that was.
Verse 19.
Okay, 19. Really? Yeah, he was the most honored of all us. All right, so... So what it looks like to me is Shechem really does have feelings for Dinah after this. And not only is he willing to pay the price, he's willing to pay the bride price for a virgin, even though she's not a virgin anymore. Which is, I think, this is, you know, that honorableness to him, maybe what that's referring to later. So... But here at Hamor, he's like, hey, let's just make this the first of many intermarriages. Now, why would he want to do that, Reagan? We're going to find out in a minute. All right. So the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and his father deceitfully.
I have ESV as deceitfully. Anybody got anything else? Because the word could mean deceptively as well. It could go either way. Does everybody have deceitful? Okay. All right. The word could go either way. But they answer, he, at least very little, at the very minimum, is deceptively, if not deceitfully, which I think we're going to, we could probably justify deceit here in a minute, because he had defiled their sister Dinah. I'm trying to get to this idea that this defilement has a broad range. It could be anywhere from it could be focusing on the sexual part of it, or it could be focusing on he defiled her by the fact that now she's been with a Canaanite, which, you know, Jacob, you know, they're trying to get away from that. They've been, and so he's been, she's been had by a man who doesn't worship Yahweh. So this doesn't make, this is not about ceremonially unclean though, but it's about her reputation has been soiled. She's not a virgin anymore. She never could bring the full bride price for another man because of what happened. So as we think about it, they said to him, "We cannot do this thing." Can't do it because you're uncircumcised. And then they say, "If you'll get circumcised, then we'll do this what you ask. We'll give you our daughters. We'll take your daughters. We can all do this back and forth thing. We can do this." I think that is probably where the deceit comes in, that they never intended to do that. So this pleased Hamor. But did it please Hamor so that they could do right by Dinah? No, it did not. That's not why it pleased him. We're going to find out, because he's going to talk to the men of the city, and he's going to say, "Hey, you guys all need to do this with us because, you know, Shechem really shouldn't have done that with that girl, and we need to make it right. So you guys need to do this with us." No, that's not what he said. He said, "Look, if we'll do this, you look out there, see those guys, look, all that wealth they got, we can get all this for ourselves." So Hamor was dishonorable in a sense that he wasn't after doing the right thing. He wasn't after justice. He was after plunder and wealth. So that is Hamor. Verse 25, the men of the city do circumcise themselves, and on the third day when they were sore, two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and came against the city while it felt secure and killed all the males. They killed Hamor and his son Shechem with a sword and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went away. Now, I said she hadn't been home because they took her out of his house. It's possible she came home and then they allowed her to go back with Shechem. Doesn't say that happened. Kind of seems weird that they would do that. I think maybe Shechem was like, "You're going to stay here while I go talk to your dad." But that's the speculation, I suppose. And the sons of Jacob came. Okay, 27. All right. So killed all the males. Killed all the males. That would include the boys, if it's, you know. So I did a little research on the city of Shechem. There is a tell, which is, if you're into archaeology, a tell is just a big mound of rubble where, like, a city used to be, and then they maybe built another city on top of it, and then they built another city on top of it, so it makes this big high spot where they kept adding, you know, they destroyed a house and brought some dirt in, make it flat again, then built another house or something. Or maybe a battle took place there and it was destroyed, and then they just rebuilt from the ruins. So it makes this big thing called a tell. And there's a tell I think this is in the West Bank, actually, right now, that they consider it probably where was Shechem. But it's not 100%. It just fits the right geography. It fits the right time frame as far as the artifacts go. But they haven't found anything that said Shechem written on it, from what I can tell. So there is a place And that's where they get the idea where it is on the map as well. Now, based on the tell size of the city wall that they found there, presuming this is actually Shechem, they had estimation for the population based on the size. Because I was interested in, well, how many men was this that these two guys went and slaughtered? Probably it said a male population, a minimum of 50, up to about be 100, maybe 125. That would be fighting age males, not all the boys either, and the old men too. That would be fighting age males. That's what they come up with. Again, taking it at face value, they killed all the males. Maybe some of the men were out that day. But it does say that when it talks about Hamor, and it says, came to the gate of their city and spoke to the men of their city. So, spoke to the men of the city, and that was the conditions. The conditions were that the men, every male among you be circumcised. Now, I'm not so naive that I'm thinking some of the guys were like, I think I'll go take a trip. You guys can be circumcised. But they killed every male that were in the city. Killed all the males, including Hamor and his son. And they did it while they were in pain from the surgery that they had inflicted upon themselves and were less able to defend themselves because of that. Not only that, in 27, the sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city. Okay, now, this could just mean Levi and Simeon again, but I think it probably means the rest of the boys showed up and they came upon the slain because they're already dead. I mean, the men are already slain by Levi and Simeon. Levi, son, this is not good. No, I'm just kidding. And so they plundered the city. They took their flocks and their herds and their donkeys and whatever was in the city and in the field. I find it very difficult to believe that, you know, after doing all this, it's not just they killed everybody. They don't even kill everybody, all the males. They plundered it. They took everything they had, including their wives and their little ones. I guess those would be the little girls because they said they killed all the males, so they must have killed all the male boys if they killed all the males. And they took it all. And so now we have Jacob and his family and, you know, pretty big, he was a big wealthy guy, so he probably had servants and obviously he had female servants. So they're now encamped outside the city, but the city's no more. If they kill all the males and took everything, which goes to Jacob's thoughts here. In verse 30, Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have brought trouble on me by making me stink to the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites." So while this city might have been just basically eliminated, Shechem, the Shechemites were, you know, they were probably distant relatives from the other Canaanites and Perizzites around. And so when they find out what happens, Jacob's not going to be thought very kindly of. And, of course, his whole family is not going to be thought kindly of. My numbers are few, and if they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household. So it's a pretty logical statement for him to make, and this is why it's like scratching my head to think that later Joseph goes back to Shechem. I'm not saying it couldn't happen. Maybe the new inhabitants have time to forget. Also seems rather unlikely. But anyway, he's very concerned about that. And then that's why it's the next thing that God tells Jacob is, arise, go to Bethel and dwell there. Like, y'all got to go. Even though, you know, there's a chapter break, but in the text, it would just read straight through. So, and lastly,
I'm not skipping on purpose, but I just wanted to go with the flow there. But verse 31, the brothers, they say, should he treat our sister like a prostitute? And some have a word harlot there, and that would be either one of those could be derived from that same Hebrew word. Could go either way. The difference being the prostitute is making herself available for money, whereas the harlot is just simply making herself available because she's that kind of girl. And so either way, the boys, Levi and Simeon, the men, their comment reflects back on how they saw what Shechem did. Basically, he said, Shechem looked at Dinah and said, you're available, I'll just take you. Just as he would have a prostitute who was making herself available. So the insult was his considering their sister a prostitute or a harlot. And presumably she was doing nothing to warrant that. But we don't know that either. So that ends the tale, I wanted to talk about the different characters that we're going through here. And like I said, I believe though that really the primary focus of Genesis 34 is the dishonor to Jacob's family that Shechem imposed upon them, and their response to that. And then we can learn different things from this, but because even though Dinah's violation by Shechem initiates the narrative, the chapter itself emphasizes the family's outrage, their plans to get retribution for what happened. So Jacob's, we talked about Jacob's fear, and his moving to Bethel underscored the consequences that were, that came from this. It was a major deal for them. They had bought this land, so now they're just having to leave it. They want anybody to sell it to, apparently, if all the males have been. Nobody close by, anyway. So,
looks like they got their money back.
Oh, yeah, they definitely got more than they put in. I would say that, absolutely. They didn't really sell it, but they got a refund. That one. So Dinah and Shechem are catalysts, but the family's defense of their honor and ethnic identity is central to the thing that's going on here. This defending of their honor, defending of their ethnic identity, that she was, maybe doubly defiled in the sense of personally, and the family was defiled by the interaction with the Canaanites there. It also informs us to some degree of what happens with Jacob's blessing to Simeon and Levi later, as well as the tribes of Simeon and Levi. Many have pointed out that when the tribes of Simeon and Levi are given their allotment in the land, that neither one of them they're scattered. Neither one of them end up with their own just specific little plot.
Allocation,
yeah. Simeon is given towns and places, but they're not all connected together. And of course, the tribe of Levi, though it is elevated in a sense to the priesthood, they don't get any land. They're all distributed among the tribe as well. And there's specific sort of pointing back to what happened right here as part of what's going on there. So we see, and again, we also see the continuance of deception used within the family. Although it does appear that God uses this to move them onto a new area, obviously moving in accordance to His plan, and we can be reminded that even in our missteps, and the misstep is not necessarily to
It's not necessarily their it's not necessarily their wanting to stand up for their family name. That's not necessarily the misstep, or stand up for their sister. But the sort of the overdoing it that happened, which results in their consequences later. And so basically, if I want to, you know, I would point to them going out in vengeance, whereas God tells us that vengeance is of the Lord, and that we should be tempered in our responses. We can learn from this as an example of taking God's justice into our own hands and the negative results that can follow from that. God has a plan for His justice, and we should follow that plan. And so it's going to affect the family. It's going to affect their future in many different ways.